Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where today we talk about arts and culture. Later in the broadcast, we will meet Dr. Linda Stone from the Ohio State University Medical Center and talk about her program, Humanism in Medicine. But right now, I am delighted to welcome back to the show Peggy Kriadai, who is the artistic director of Opera Columbus, and Edward Carrigan, who is the artistic director of Short North Stage. And I might have murdered your name a little bit.
So no, you did just fine.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you and welcome to you both. Edward's production of West Side Story at the Short North Stage is running now at the Garden Theater. That is a show that everybody thinks they know until they go to see and hear it live in the theater, and then you know it even better. It is a huge undertaking for a theater that's always been ambitious and always doing great work. How are you surviving Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim's West Side Story now at the Garden Theater?
It's going really wonderfully. We have an amazing cast, and we have a fantastic orchestra, and we have a new take on the show, which has been really, really fun to steer clear of the Jerome Robbins original concept for the show, which I've done many times.
Are you allowed to do that?
You are, yeah. Yeah, the piece stays the same, and we just have new staging, new choreography.
One of the recent revivals on Broadway, and it's on its way back
now.
It's every 4 or 5 years there's a big new production of West Side Story, performed much of it in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know if you're doing that here. I don't know if it's necessary to do that.
We don't, actually. Arthur Lawrence directed, the writer directed that 2009 production on Broadway. But it's not licensed that way. They have it all in English.
Where did you find your cast?
Well, we looked locally first. You know, we always have our open calls in the summertime. And we looked for all the local dancers and talent that we could. And then we went to New York and found everything that we couldn't find locally. So we have 10 from New York City. And then we have 14 people under the age of 18 who are dancing in the ensemble. Mm. And then we have another 10, 11 that are local performers as well.
Your production of West Side Story opened on October 17th. It runs for a month. It runs until November 17th.
That's
it
right.
It is there at the Garden Theater right now in the Short North. The Garden Theater was rescued from, I don't know, from decay, certainly, a number of years ago and brought back. What are the challenges? What are the benefits of working in that space?
Well, it's a beautiful space to work in every single day. The founders, Rick and Peter, Rick Gore and Peter Yockel, found this building and decided to make it a working theater.
They had to look for it, too, because it was boarded up. I mean, we drove by there for years having no idea what was there.
Yeah. So, I mean, running a historical theater is always a challenge. Things are always falling apart. But what a beautiful space to be in every day and show up and do some creative work every morning till night.
We'll get back with Edward Carrigan talking more about the ongoing season at the Short North Stage, which it's in, what, fourth or fifth year?
This is our ninth season.
Where have I been? Yeah. Wake up already. The ninth season here. Peggy Kriadai is here from Opera Columbus. Peggy and her colleagues at Opera Columbus are almost reinventing opera in very positive ways. Now, this morning very early, I got on Facebook and I referred to myself as an old white guy, which is what I am, who could use some re-education and is willing to begin kicking and screaming to live in the world as it is today rather than the world I remember. If you are of that mindset, you can't do better than to check out Opera Columbus's productions as supervised by artistic director Peggy Kriadai, who is a singer herself. You have a new show, new in many ways, mm-hmm. always really, coming to Columbus in a few weeks called As One. Discuss.
So As One, the Grammy-nominated score, beautiful opera, two characters that represent one person, Hannah. So it's the story of Hannah, a transgender woman, and it tells of her self-discovery and acceptance and her journey. It's a fairly short opera. You have Hannah before, Hannah after, and it is beautifully told. There's a film element to it. That's mainly the set is the film that is shown behind them during the opera, and Carpe Diem String Quartet is on stage playing the score.
Transgender issues are a topic that I am working very hard personally to educate myself about because it's something, it's a concept that I had to struggle to, because mm-hmm. I'm old, to grasp. But I'm getting there, and this will help me get there. But you have two characters in this opera, a soprano and a baritone, playing the same person, as I understand
That's
it.
That's right. That's right. The story is really about discovery and acceptance, and that is relatable to every human being. So I've seen the show a couple times now. I laugh out loud. I'm in tears. It's so well, the story is so well told. It's not something that, what am I trying to say? It will arouse your emotions, but it's not meant to be something that's combative. It's a beautiful storytelling. And if for instance, the subject of transgender person is something, is just a word far off and you don't totally, you haven't learned about it, which I hadn't to the degree I do now, that's for sure. It's a great way to learn about it.
Which we need to do because the world has got to be opening up. I mean, especially in times like this, we really have to be opening up to embrace everybody, to
Absolutely.
Invite everybody to the party for goodness
yeah.
sake.
Yeah, and the LGBTQ community is not going anywhere. And the more we can learn about it, you know, you can't help but think the more peaceful our world will be just being educated and being familiar.
So this, now correct me if I'm wrong, because I am coming from a place of ignorance and trying. This is somebody who was born a certain way, who wants to live, who needs to live, or is convinced that they need to live the other way. Am I right? Is that
right? So
fair?
They're born, yeah. This Hannah was born a boy and inside felt that they were actually female and were more comfortable with that identity. And that person's body did not catch up with what's inside with their soul and their person. And so Hannah went on this journey to become her authentic self. And it's beautiful and it's very courageous. One controversial thing that has happened as this has toured across the U.S., it's one of the most performed opera in North America right now, is that it's Hannah's story. It's not the transgender story. It is simply Hannah's story and her journey. And so in order to, I felt it important that we tell the Columbus story and that there are people living in our community just like Hannah, but maybe he took a different journey. And so Kappa and Opera Columbus are the executive producers of a short film, 20-minute film. It's called Visibility, and its a filmmaker is Saria Miller. And it tells the story of six transgender people in Columbus in a beautiful way. And after the performances, if you stick around, we will be showing the film.
The performances are in the Southern Theater November 8th and 10th. And mm-hmm. on the 9th, what happens on the 9th, on the middle day?
On the 9th with Kappa, we are hosting a community conversation. So we flew in the creative directors, the filmmaker, Kimberly Reed, Mark Campbell, who is a co-librettist with Kimberly, and then Laura Kaminsky, the composers. And then we've also invited to the stage to be part of that conversation Ashton Colby, who is a gender media consultant and a transgender man in Columbus. And he has been so helpful to us at Opera Columbus.
The fact that such a thing exists as a gender media consultant means that we are really in uncharted waters and maybe needing some help and maybe needing some guidance getting there. What kind of – are you getting any blowback about producing this piece from – oh, I'm getting a laugh. I'm just asking here.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yes. So, you know, it is a passion. People are passionate about their beliefs, and I do respect that. However, I think when it can cross a line very easily, and we have experienced that. We've lost some lifetime supporters, which has been heartbreaking for me. We've also gained a community of people that are like, I had no idea that opera can be this inclusive, and I love that.
What I've seen of it, there's nothing in any way gratuitous about the piece.
No.
The music is quite beautiful. I really like the string quartet and two singers, the soprano
beautiful.
And the baritone, the way that's done. Just as a sound experience,
yes.
it's quite lovely.
Except for a Grammy, for a reason.
Right. So, I'm not really sure what the real objection could be. And I would always say to somebody who hates it, listen to watch it first and then hate it. But don't
I think
it.
So. I mean, these aren't people that have seen the opera and they have a beef with the opera. They have a point of view politically and personally, and that's where a lot of this is coming from. I understand that's the climate. I think that's the perfect time for art to enter the scene and bring an understanding that's disarming.
Edward, I'm older than you are. I don't quite remember this, but I do know that West Side Story, when it opened on Broadway, was very controversial, and there were really racist comments being made in the press around that about glorifying gangs. They thought everything was sort of being legitimized in a way rather than depicting what you could see if as you left the Broadway theater and went maybe one, two blocks in either direction.
Yeah, it was a very evocative piece in 1957. It wasn't as successful as people imagine it was because it's lasted all these years and still been such an American masterpiece, but it lost to The Music Man that year, the Tony Award. I read this book called The Shook Up Generation that was written in 1958 about the gangs of New York City, and it was fascinating how aligned it was with the show, and how these gangs operated really brought new life to all of those characters.
You say the term gang even in 2019, 2020, and it frightens people. Mm. It's still a scary word when the gangs in West Side Story are frankly sexy and they dance very well. And I mean, this is an illusion. This is the theater. This is not meant to be, in this case, really hidebound reality. It is a performance. It is a piece of art. Why has it lasted so long? Why 60 years later? It's going to be done on Broadway again this year. As I said, every 4 or 5 years there is a huge new production in New York that tours. Why? Why is it still going on, West Side Story?
Well, to start with, Leonard Bernstein's score is amazing. You know, it's timeless. It's complicated. It's interesting to choreograph too. I can say that firsthand. It's one of the hardest things I've ever had to work on. But I think beyond that, love in a time of hate is kind of a timeless issue as well, you know? People walk out of the theater this past weekend saying, my God, it feels like it was written yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. Which I say that about Mozart, too, frankly. I mean, it's always fresh. It just works because it's that good. Mm-hmm. Your production is at the Garden Theater in the Short North right now.
That's right.
Through November 17th, so get your tickets now. Peggy Kriya Dai, As One, is on the 8th. And 10th at the Southern Theater. I'm going to ask you a bit more about it when we come back from a quick break. Don't go away. This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. We'll be right back.
How do you turn what you love into a career? On season 2 of the Rivet podcast from WOSU, hear firsthand from students translating their interests into jobs without college. Listen to This American Graduate Project as we highlight the next generation of workers in the state's top industries of agriculture, insurance, and healthcare. Support for the Rivet podcast series comes from COSI. Subscribe now at wosu.org/rivet, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. You're listening to All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Peggy Kriya Dai, who is the artistic director of Opera Columbus. Peggy and her company present As One, a new opera opening on November 8th at the Southern Theater. We'll talk more about that. And Edward Carrigan is here. He is the artistic director of the Short North Stage. His production, a co-production with the Columbus Children's Theater.
That's right. Yeah.
Is currently running at the Garden Theater, West Side Story, Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim, What's Not to Love. What is the role of the Children's Theater in the show?
So about a year ago, Susan Pringle and I got together to discuss what kind of collaboration our two companies could do. I had directed a few shows for the Children's Theater over the years, and we wanted to do something together. And this seemed like a perfect opportunity to bring this marvelous score to a new generation, this wonderful story, to kids that might not be exposed to it on stage. I know there's a film coming out, but I think this is a unique opportunity, and we have 14 young people in the show who are all fantastically talented, and they are sharks and jets and sharks and jet girls, and they're mixing with the New York City professionals we have in the show, so it's a really neat sort of cross-section of performers.
That's kind of, even in such a high energy show as that, more is more and more is better, more energy. So that's a great idea for a collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Peggy, As One has stirred some controversy before it even opened, before anyone's ever heard a note of it. This is a two-person opera playing one character on both sides of the gender divide with the Carpe Diem String Quartet, the wonderful string quartet. I should mention that a member of that quartet, Corina Fujiwara, wrote an opera for you last mm-hmm. year, which was a smash hit, which was an opera all about Columbus.
That's right. Yeah. So I can't wait to spend more time with her. That particular opera is up for a GCAC award, artistic award. So I'm excited about that. Janet and I both are.
Tell me how you are preparing the community or your company for working in As One. I'm still trying to get my head around why it's so controversial, but, you know, what are you doing to pave the way, as it will?
I think it's controversial simply because of the subject matter.
Which is transgender.
Transgender people. And I think it's an unknown for a lot of people. And so I really encourage those of you on whatever your beliefs are, come see the show November 8 and 10. Buy a ticket. You won't regret it. It's not a long show, and it's moving. It's beautiful. To prepare, we have done a lot of work with ourselves.
Yeah.
And that is hiring Ashton Colby, come and did a presentation to the staff, and not assuming anything, had him do a presentation on some very basic things, like what does LGBTQ stand for, and what does it mean, and what are pronouns, and what are the big misconceptions, and what do we need to know? How do you talk about it?
How do you talk about it? Right.
So it doesn't offend people. I mean, we had our box office in there, and we're like, okay, you're probably going to be the ones that get the phone calls, and so it was. It was probably the most important thing I've done in my job to do that. And then we brought him to a board meeting, and he gave the same presentation to the board.
How'd that go?
It went really well and really bad. It depends who you were. It was very important, and it has brought about conversation among the company at the board level and the staff level that has shaped how we will go forward in DEI initiatives, and how we will be aggressive about being inclusive.
DEI meaning what?
Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Okay.
Yes. So, and that comes in, you know, lots of different things. Women's issues, race issues, and gender issues.
You know, if you have an objection, I have to remember what Beverly Sills, the great soprano, said 40 years ago. La Traviata is an opera about a whore.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, she's pretty, and she's beautiful, and she sings beautiful music in Italian, which I guess distances it. But she is a kept woman. That yeah. is a sordid story that the original audience would have recognized and really kind of glared and gloated over a little mm-hmm. bit. We don't want to gloat here. We want to sort of, again, find a tuneful and beautiful way to live in the world as it is today.
Yes, that's a beautiful way to say it. I think I will steal that.
We'll come back to you in a moment. I want Edward to talk a little bit more about what else is going on at the Short North stage. You are running West Side Story right now. By the way, out there, if you only know West Side Story from the movie, love the movie, but go see the show.
Yeah.
Go see it. Go see it live.
It's
go
a different experience on stage.
You know, go have the sweat beads hit you from the dancers. No, it's very compelling that way.
It is. And it's a beautiful design. We have a guest designer, Jason Bowen, who did a fascinating take on the set. I mentioned earlier to you that I choreographed all the jet stuff and directed the show, but we hired a Sharks choreographer to come in to make sure that the two
did you two
dance
fight?
Vocab-
did you two fight each other?
Oh, no, we're good friends, and he's wonderful. Trevor Schmidt is his name, and he came in and did Mambo and America and a few, and I Feel Pretty, so anything that's sort of like grounded in that culture, which was really neat. But at the same time as West Side Story, we're running the Rocky Horror Show, which Ann Fisher is the narrator this evening and tomorrow. She's our guest narrator this weekend.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm a little hurt that you didn't invite
me. I extend an invitation right now.
Ann Fisher, indeed. I mean, wow. Jeez, some of us.
After that, we've already started working on the disco in Saturday Night Fever, which is going to be our holiday show this year. We had a lot of success with Mamma Mia last year, so Disco Christmas is our new thing, and we're going to do Saturday Night Fever.
I had bell-bottom pants then in 1978. I did. You know, they didn't fit like Travolta's did, but you weren't born, but I had those pants then.
Dressing rooms are swimming with them right
yes,
now.
Right, yeah, I did that. Yeah.
In the new year, we're doing an adult comedy entitled The Mother Effer with the Hat. And
good. All right, yes. Why?
That's another story around the Latinx community. And then after that, we have Young Frankenstein, Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein, which I was on the national tour, so I'm really excited to bring it to Columbus.
Go back a little bit to the Mother Show.
Mother Show.
That's one. I don't know that one, so tell us a little bit more about that and be prudent. But tell us
a little bit more
about that, yes.
It's a play that was on Broadway, I think, about 10 years ago. It was Chris Rock and Bobby Cannavale were in it in New York. It's a fantastic comedy by Stephen Adley Gerges. And it's an indescribable show. It's very intimate. It takes place in three apartments. It's about an affair and who had the affair. And it's a little bit vulgar, but very, very funny. And we've sort of had luck with shows that are a little bit vulgar and very funny in that February slot after Hand of God. And so we're trying to continue that tradition in that time period. But I love the play. I think it has a really great message.
I can't wait. I'll be in the front row. That sounds that sounds like something I would really enjoy a lot, because it's always good to laugh, boys and girls.
Oh, yes.
Wherever you are, it's always good to laugh. There is not a lot of laughs probably in As One.
There is.
Well, shut up. Let me let you talk.
It's a human story. It's not. Going through a life change, it can be very scary, but there are lots of laughs along the way. and you're going to laugh. You're going to cry. It's very moving. It's so well written.
The composer is Laura Kaminsky. Who wrote the text?
So the text was written both by Kimberly Reed and Mark Campbell. Kimberly also did the film. It's Kimberly's story. It's her story, which, you know, wow, very vulnerable of her.
When was it first done? How did it get to your—well, of course, you're out and about. You have your ear to the ground for what's new and interesting. But how did it get to you, and what was your initial
reaction?
I feel
horrible because I don't have the premiere date, but it's been out there for a few years, for sure. It has taken off, I think, to her surprise, to all of their surprise. It became so important and so popular in the canon for opera.
You have, opera's wonderful, but wider than opera, you have an important opportunity to really begin the discussion in Columbus on this topic and involve everybody, especially on the 9th of November. All you have to do is show up to the Southern Theater. It's free.
It's free.
To hear this community discussion, and you'll see the film. Remind us of the film.
The film is called Visibility, and the filmmaker is Saria Miller. 20 minutes. It features six members of the transgender community in Columbus. And I also should mention, on Monday, Opera Columbus is hosting a luncheon, which we've done in the past, and it's called Opera Columbus Asks, ... And this year it's, how can the arts make Columbus a more inclusive community? And we have a panel of leaders in different areas of Columbus, different kinds of leadership, hosted by Frederick at COSAI. And we will be in the audience. We've just arranged for it. And some of the proceeds will go to Kaleidoscope, which is an incredible
nonprofit. That's a walk-in center for youth, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. LGBTQ youth.
Yeah, that's a great... but I do want to remind you, Peggy, and everybody listening, that opera is nothing except people screaming at each other in foreign languages, and it's very boring, and it's not relevant in any way to anyone's life. And if you're really interested in that, you must have died 20 years ago. And if you believe what I just said, you haven't been around much. what else you have going on this year?
So Valentine's Day is The Barber of Seville.
Okay.
I just saw the set drawings. They are crazy. We've never had a set like this. It'll be in English.
Good.
And the cast is from everywhere. Mary Birnbaum's our director, and Vishwa Subbaraman is our conductor. And it is a romantic comedy. You can get a special seat in the box, and the character Berta will come serve you dinner. with you and your date in the show.
And I bet it won't be chicken nuggets either. I bet it,
no, it'll be very good.
Yep.
So it's a lot of fun. It will be unlike an opera that you've seen before. There's a lot of interesting surprises. There's T-shirt cannons. We're having a glitter beard contest, which will be judged by the characters. It's pop culture fun. You'll laugh out loud. It's great. I said, if I do the Barber of Seville, it better be funny. So
really, because sometimes they try to be so musically correct, they lose the humor in it.
I agree, which it was never meant to be like that. So we asked Mary to write a new translation. So
good.
We commissioned that from her. So that's great. And then towards the end of the season, we have two major things. Popea Project is a co-production with the Columbus Museum of Art. It's $30 tickets in the Short North. We're doing 10 shows. And the audience...
doing it in the Pizzuti collection,
that's
is that right?
Correct. So the orchestra, we have an orchestra on each of the three levels. And the character, they're happening at the same time, the scenes on each level. The characters travel from gallery to tell the story. It's dressed by Fashion Week Columbus and Edward Liang did the choreography. And the audience is masked, so there's a bit of safety when you're up close to what's happening because it's kind of scandalous.
This is the Emperor Nero and his really horrible wife, and then these are two of the most wonderfully horrible people
yes.
that ever lived.
Actually, everybody in the opera is
horrible. Yeah,
but it's really fabulous. And then
good guy comes suicided 30 minutes into it. So everybody's miserable.
Even he's creepy in our show.
He is
though,
creepy.
Actually.
Yes, he is.
But
then
in June, we decided to do something that's very different. So it'll be Opera Columbus Presents Nina West, and we're doing it in the Southern Theater. And I mean, Nina is royalty in this town. And I've been to Access. I've seen her shows. I love them. And I'm like,
remind everybody who Nina West is.
She is a very famous drag queen. And she is on a billboard downtown. So if you go downtown, you'll see her. And Andrew's.
She's quite a sight.
Yeah, she's something. And Andrew's an incredibly generous member of Columbus.
Yes,
financially and otherwise. So
he's a big guy and he's all love.
He is.
He has a big heart.
Yeah.
He just
got signed for another TV show
good things are happening, which is nice.
Yeah. And I felt like although I love Access and I love being in the Short North, it would be pretty great to put her in the Southern Theater with all the glory of that theater. And all the theatrics that will be at her fingertips. And we wanted to do that for Columbus.
So Nina West will be making her debut in opera.
That's correct.
That's great.
No, she's doing her own show, but I said, just give a nod to opera. That's all I ask.
I'll bet she could. I bet she could sing Tosca tomorrow if she wanted to.
I can't wait to see what it is. I can't wait.
Well, I want to make sure everybody knows about As One, which is running at the Southern Theater November 8th and 10th, presented by Opera Columbus, a piece for two singers and string quartet, which gets us into the world of one transgender story. There
That's
are many.
Right.
This is one story. Mm-hmm. And on the 9th, there is a free to the community public event, a discussion and viewing of a film of people from Columbus are transgender people from Columbus. So just come. Just come there.
Please come.
And Edward Kerrigan is running West Side Story at the Garden Theater in the Short North with how many people on stage?
There are 36.
And how many people in the pit?
There are another 9 in the pit.
How many bedrooms do you have to find for people? How many
Airbnbs all over the city.
Airbnbs all over the city. And you talk about chicken nuggets. You got to feed all these people. And for goodness sake. So
yeah, the arts have an economic impact. We should say that,
they have a huge economic impact.
So true.
Because you've got people in the Short North. You've got people at the Southern Theater. You also, Peggy, are working in other venues. You're moving around town.
That's right. So I love the Southern Theater at the Pizzuti Collection. Next season, we're traveling as well. We haven't made that season announcement yet, but it's really going to be fun.
Don't go too far away that we can't get to you.
No, it's not. It's all in the city. But I think it's important to not expect everyone to come to us, and that we want to be in the community and make it accessible for
you
people.
Also want to really stimulate the conversation, and no matter what it may be, which I think As One will do for the community, mm-hmm. in terms of the transgender issues and what people face when they have to struggle in that way. And it's time that everybody kind of take their place, that the place that they're meant to have, that they that works well for them.
And authentic self.
Right. And you're doing it with music and with words and with Carpe Diem String Quartet, and you're commissioning new operas, and you're relooking at old favorites. And if you loved it 150 years ago, you're going to love it this year, too. It's, you know, it's the same thing with just more glitter. You know, that
what a neat city this is. That you know, we have such a diverse audience.
Yeah.
And as an outsider, I have to say I'm really impressed by Columbus. And,
yeah, me too.
And
well,
what they like to see on stage.
You know, as we finish up here, I want to just ask you, who's coming to your shows? What are the audiences looking like?
Well, ours are getting younger and younger, which is nice because of some of the shows we do, and we'll have people grow with us. But I think our audience base is securely between 40 and 65. That's the majority.
Does it look like the community, or does it look like...
Oh, yes. Very diverse audience, which I love. You know, one thing I said about West Side Story is I want people from the Latinx community to come see the show. I don't want to do a show about their history and then not have them attend the show and just have a bunch of white people in the audience, you know. I think that's really important. So it's nice to see that that diversity in the audience and on stage.
And I know Opera Columbus has become a date night destination. I mean, because I've seen it. I've been, not that I'm dating anymore, but I'm just saying, I've seen it as I've been in the theater. I've seen people, it's all skewing much younger in terms of who's coming. Not that everybody isn't welcome. I'm just making the point.
Yeah. I mean, it's important we include everyone. I'm great conversations with some of our patrons that are from an older generation, and those voices are equally heard at the table, and I take it very seriously, and I'm trying to serve the whole city.
Thank you, Peggy Criadi, Artistic Director of Opera Columbus. Always a pleasure. I want you to come back in a few weeks and report in on that luncheon and what you learned about that dialogue. I'd like to know more about that.
Great.
Thank you, Edward Kerrigan, the Short North Stage, West Side Story, now in production. Thank you both. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. When we come back, we will meet Dr. Linda Stone and talk about humanism in medicine at The Ohio State University. Don't go away. Welcome back to today's All Sides Weekend, talking about arts and culture in Columbus. I'm Christopher Purdy. I have two very special guests who are going to share this segment of the program with me. Matt Lordo is an MD, get this everybody, an MD, PhD student at The Ohio State University College of Medicine, whose parents must be thrilled to bits. And Dr. Linda Stone is a physician in family practice, former dean of the medical school, and she is co-founder of Humanism in Medicine at The Ohio State University. And I am delighted to welcome you both to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes, thank you very much.
Dr. Stone, tell me about, first of all, what is humanism in medicine at The Ohio State University?
Humanism in medicine is a way that we try to create a more humanistic environment in which we serve our patients, educate our students and residents, and do meaningful research. And we do that by offering a lot of arts-related activities.
Oh, come on. You can pipe that into the rooms on the radio. What's the big deal?
There's a lot more to it than that.
Let's go. Yeah.
Chris, you are absolutely right. What we know is that the burnout and even suicide rate is high among physicians and other healthcare professionals. So we want to make sure when our students come into the healthcare profession, especially the medical school, that they have a way of keeping alive who they are as a human being. And many of them have been involved in the arts all their lives. Why should they give up the arts or basketball? Or whatever they want to do, why should they give it up as they become a physician? Because when they become a physician, their patients expect that they're going to be a human being too.
Now, as I understand it, you were initially wanting to expose medical students to the arts or encourage them to perform themselves because many of them had done so when they were younger and less frantically busy. But that has grown into embrace patients. That has grown into embrace accessibility in all of the arts to the entire medical center campus and beyond. And we're talking about 35,000 people, give or take. Am I right?
We are on the road for that. We started with serving students, residents, faculty, and staff. And then patients and families wanted to come to our events. I mean, we have, like in November, we're going to have Opera Columbus, your guest just recently. And so we offer about 30 events a year. And so everyone can come. But we know that when patients are in the hospital today, they're very sick. So we've looked at and begun doing some live streaming into patient rooms.
What is the benefit? I mean, is there even a benefit you can quantify, a physical benefit in terms of physical well-being you can quantify, you being a medical and a scientist yourself, that exposure to the arts can give anyone? What is that?
We call it the healing presence of the arts, and we want it to permeate the whole medical center because excellent research shows that if patients are and the healthcare professionals are exposed more and more to the arts. It has a healing ability with their bodies. We know that when you're under a lot of stress, your immune system declines to operate as well as it used to. And we know that the arts can help that healing process so that you are healthier and happier.
When you said that to me over coffee a few weeks ago, I remembered that recently I spent several days in a monastery, and some of the monks were very young and some of the monks were very old. And one of the elderly monks said to me, the reason we never die is that we stand and sing 8 hours a day. And so just the vibration and the breathing and the posture, never mind the spiritual connection, keeps us alive.
That's
quite literally.
That is a beautiful example.
But I was struck by that. I mean, and I thought, well, that does make sense. You know, you're physically, you're corporally engaged and spiritually engaged at the same time. Matt Lordo, you are here with Dr. Stone. You are an, I'm not sure, I didn't know that was possible to be an MD and PhD student at the same time. I was going to ask, what do you do in your spare time? But that's a dumb question because you probably don't have any. But you are involved with an orchestra. Tell me about the orchestra.
Yes. So when I came to the medical school in Ohio State in 2016, I became aware of a medical school orchestra at Ohio State led by a former OSU marching band drum major called David Pettit. And I wanted to get involved. So I went to my first rehearsal, had a great time, wanted to become more involved in future years. And that sort of led me to being on the leadership board for the 2017, 2018, and now 2019 seasons. So this is my third year on the leadership team for the orchestra. And I've really enjoyed seeing the group grow over time. We've expanded. So we now have students from all of the professional programs at Ohio State. So not only the health professions, but also law students and others across campus. So it's really become what started as a very small group has started evolving over time, and it's been great to see.
And you do concerts?
Yes, we do two a semester. So
So
we typically do an evening concert, so a lot of the parents of the students can come, and then we also do midday concerts so that people around the medical center are able to come and hear us.
Anyone coming up? Any concerts coming up soon?
Yes, so we have two coming up. So the first one is Tuesday, December 3rd at 7 p.m., and then the second one is Friday, December 6th, and the Friday one is at 12:30, and the Tuesday one is at 7 p.m., and these are both in Miling Hall at Ohio State campus.
Which a lot of people will know where that is. That's not hard to find.
Right.
It's right by the James and the Medical Center over there.
Right.
Dr. Stone, you have a chorus, you have an orchestra, you have a lot of performance entities made up by constituents of the medical mm-hmm. center, students, faculty, anybody involved there that wants to be around. Tell me about, again, the benefit or the accessibility of the patients, because the patients are why you're all there in the first place.
If you have healthy doctors, you have healthy patients. And I think the big message to us has been, if you come into medical school and you have to give up everything about who you are, then you're not going to be the physician that's available to the patients and the families. But if we help keep alive the person that you are when you walk through our doors, then and the arts are a perfect way to do that. Whether you love to just go to the symphony or play in the orchestra, it doesn't matter. It helps to keep something alive within yourself. And then it's there for patients and families when you go on to practice.
As close as I've ever gotten to medical school is Chicago Med and ER, our TV shows, which I'm addicted to shows like that. And in those shows, the boss, the head resident, will tell people, the interns, you know, I'm your mother and father, and you, it's like the Marines, and you don't have any time, and you do nothing that I don't tell you to do. It creates, at least in Hollywood, a very stressful situation. I imagine it is stressful, but are you encouraged, Matt, to do other things besides, and don't be looking at Dr. Stone telling, you know, nodding at you, to really get out there and be human.
Yeah, so for me, humanism and sort of music offers a really good way to sort of de-stress from the medical and graduate school sides of things, because it does get tough, and it's even tougher doing two doctorate programs at the same time. But definitely a lot. We practice on Tuesday evenings, and every Tuesday evening when I walk into our rehearsal room, it sort of is rejuvenating and revitalizing, and it really keeps me going throughout the week. And I know I can speak for a lot of the other musicians in the group that it sort of is a revitalization every week for them to come to rehearsal.
What do you play?
I play euphonium. So I started actually with orchestra in fifth grade. I grew up in the Worthington School District. And so I started with cello in fifth grade, picked up the euphonium in sixth grade band, and then I've just kept those going as I've done.
In sixth grade, it was probably bigger than you were at the time. It's a big instrument. It's a heavy instrument. Yeah.
Yeah, I started on a student instrument that was a little bit downsized, and then as I grew, I got the real deal.
tell me, Dr. Stone, when this program began, how it began, and what the initial, I guess, description of it was. What did you want to do and why and when?
For the orchestra, for the whole
student
section?
For the whole thing.
For the student section, we wanted to have something for each member of our healthcare team, so faculty and staff. The student section, we decided right in the beginning, you only can have a student section of humanism and medicine if the students design it and run it. And so everything in the student section, including the orchestra, is student-driven. The idea was to have them hang on to who they are as a human being, and the arts is one way to do it. They have a lot of other activities, service organizations and such. But I think Matt can also tell you the history of how this started back in 2009-10 as far as the orchestra is concerned.
Yeah, how did the orchestra begin?
So it started with a group of four students back in 2009, and really it started as a very small group. It wasn't called the Professional School Orchestra. It was called Music and Myelin, which Myelin is the name of the medical school building at Ohio State. And then as interest grew, that expanded to be the Medical School Orchestra. So about 12 to 15 students would rehearse and practice in the medical school. And then a few years ago, right as I was joining in 2016, the orchestra rebranded itself as the Professional School Orchestra, and then that encompassed all of the professional school programs at Ohio State. And now we're about 30 to 40 strong and continuing to grow. So it's been really cool to see it expand over time.
When you began this work, this program, did you get any resistance from authority, I guess, and the university? These are medical students. They need to be working and studying all the time. What are you talking about? Did you get any blowback?
We didn't get a lot, because mostly...
Well, you were the boss anyway. Who was going to tell you no? I mean,
part of what we got was we never had that as when I was a medical student.
Right.
And that was about as far as it went. People weren't really negative. And then when we started really collaborating with the arts organizations across the city, I think that really helped people understand. So it was more people saying, gee, I wish I had this, rather than trying to move against us.
Let's talk about that collaboration, because we were talking about Matt's orchestra, the orchestra you're involved with that you manage and you play in, and the chorus made up of members of your community, the community. But you have, I mean, I saw a list of events coming up, and it's a long list that covers only a few weeks at a time. There's a lot going on. Who's coming to perform on the medical campus, and who can come and see them?
The next event is November 7th, and that's Hospital Poets. Fred Enderle, who
our home own base, Fred.
Yes,
yes,
and Anna Sauter and Charlene Fix. So they are bringing a poet. Her name is Karen Scott, and that's at noon in Myling on the 7th. And then your friends, the Afro Columbus folks, come on the 15th, and
they bring a performance.
They bring a performance, a full hour. They've done an hour long opera in English in the past, but this year it's Voices of Freedom, the Civil Rights.
Wonderful! That's a wonderful show. Yes.
So, and yes, students, residents, faculty, staff, community, patients, and their families are welcome to come. If we have a website, and we'll make sure that's on your website so they can go and see coming events. Columbus Children's Theater comes in December, and then the orchestra will perform in December. And Matt can tell you what is on the docket for the orchestra?
Yeah, talk to me.
Yes. So for our December concerts, we're doing a wide range of literature. So we're starting with Star Wars Through the Years. So anticipating the new Star Wars release, we're kind of going through and playing music from all of the sort of the franchise. And then we're also playing some classics like Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet overture. We're playing Pines of Rome, the finale from that. And then some holiday classics like A Charlie Brown Christmas and Carol of the Bells.
Charlie Brown and Respighi, wonderful, wonderful combination. They're absolutely perfect there. Now, there's also a chorus.
There is, Ultrasound. And they will join the orchestra. Maybe you want to talk about that for the December concert?
Yeah, so every December we do a collaboration with our a cappella group in the School of Medicine called Ultrasound, kind of a play on words. And in past years, we've done like the Hallelujah chorus with them. And then this year, they're going to be joining us for Charlie Brown Christmas and Carol of the Bells, providing the choral components of those pieces.
When you go out into the community and you ask Opera Columbus and you ask the Children's Theater to come, how do you invite them? What do you tell them to expect and what's going on?
Well, in the beginning, we didn't know what to expect, but everybody had such an open door. Columbus Children's Theater, Columbus Museum of Art, Opera Columbus, Ballet Met, and Thurber House. They said, how can we do this? So we established it together. And then once we established how we do it, then other arts organizations were on board quickly. It was mainly an ask, and people really want to help people heal. So to come to the medical center as an arts organization was really important to them.
Patients who have the ability to physically be where the performance is, do they come?
Yes. We've had a few, but like I said, it's hard when you're in the hospital today.
Because these days, if you're a little sick, you go home in 2 hours.
You do.
So if you're staying in a few days, you're pretty sick. You're pretty sick. But you have it, they can access from their rooms, can't they, in some way?
We have live streamed a couple of things, Opera Columbus being one of them. We're trying to move up on our capability of going into more patient rooms. That was just at the James, but we understand there are TVs now and connections available in the other parts of the hospital, so we're trying to tap into that.
That's your next
project. That's our big project.
That's the other wall you're going to kick down shortly. And in the few moments we have left, I just wanted to ask you as a medical professional to really help us understand, I guess for the lack of a better word, we'd say music therapy, about what the benefits are. And it's not just music. It's anything that invites thought or takes you away from, frankly, your pain. Your illness.
It does. I think some of the best research now in showing how integral to us the arts are, especially music, is when you look at Alzheimer's patients, autistic patients who have things that have kind of a barrier between them and the world as it is today. Somehow music goes through that barrier. Well, if it can go through a barrier for an Alzheimer's patient, why couldn't it go through the barrier of pain and everything else that we go through in the hospital? So I think when we look at patients and how music reaches them, we realize music reaches us all.
I will just tell you that I think a lot of people listening have had this experience with an elderly friend who was no longer with us, who was physically present but no longer with us. But I knelt by him one day and I sang a pop song from the 40s into his ear, you know. All of a sudden he clued in and he sang it back to me.
Yes.
And you can't really, I mean, I'm a wreck now telling you this, but that happened and that can happen and that does happen. And it opens the door a little bit, but sometimes the door opens wider and sometimes there's a real piece of availability there. And when people say that isn't it nice that you have that in the medical center? Well, it is nice, but it's also
healing.
It can be very life-giving,
yes.
Like giving back.
It's absolutely true. Sometimes we can cure, but all times we can heal.
We can heal. Great. I want that on my, when you speak at my funeral, I want you to say that, okay?
Do that.
And very briefly, I know that are you bringing in a new manager? Did you bring in a new director?
We are.
We're getting somebody full-time now.
We are. And that's because our dean, Dr. Kent, has really decided that this is an important initiative, the Humanism of Medicine, Medicine of the Arts Initiative. And so he has committed to hiring a full-time person. She started last week. Her name is Tracy McCambridge, and she comes to us from the Wexner Center for the Arts.
A great place to come from. Then she knows her job.
She does.
That's terrific.
She does.
Dr. Linda Stone, thank you for founding humanism and music at The Ohio State University. I know you've said you had some help doing that, you are the face of that for the community, and I thank you for that. Matt Lordo, when are you finishing your studies?
If all goes according to plan, 2024 will be the big year.
And then you'll go conduct the New York Philharmonic. That's probably he probably will, too. Remind us very quickly of the upcoming concerts.
Yeah, so the concerts are Tuesday, December 3rd at 7 p.m. and Friday, December 6th at 12:30.
Thank you very much, Matt Lordo. Thank you very much, Dr. Karen Stone. Humanism in Music at The Ohio State University. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend. My thanks to producer Mary Lee Williams. The All Side interns are Atia Toure, Tatiana Woodall, and Bobby Gaberik. And I don't have my glasses on, so sorry about that. With video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Thank you all for listening. Good afternoon.